Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, 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 and welcome. Wow, we got a good topic today. One of my favorites, and our guest, Doris Gallen, has put together a book called The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad. But I'll tell you what, you wouldn't have to be a boomer to enjoy this book. Anyone that would have a desire to travel really would find her information absolutely eye-opening. And boy, you really need to be educated, I think, when you start, if you're not with a tour group, if you just want to do like some friends of mine did and just say, well, we'll just wing it. Let's have an adventure. And an adventure they had, believe me. They never wanted to repeat it again. So with Doris, I think we're going to learn a lot about what we need to be aware of when we travel, both in the United States and outside of the United States. Doris, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me, Donna.
You know, I got to meet you in New York, and when you talked about your book, I said, I'm definitely interested in this. Here we are in a holiday period where people are on planes visiting relatives, doing all kinds of stuff, but there are also people, I've got neighbors, that when holiday periods come around, they want to be someplace else, any place else other than at home. And I just thought this would make such a good topic, especially this time of the year, and for people maybe that wonder, what should I be paying attention to with all the rules and regulations and different things that are going on? What should I do to be aware? And your book, The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad, is marvelous, but you also have all of these wonderful little booklets. It's what, 10 books, 10 little booklets.
Right.
Where you talk about where in the world, how to travel for less, from sumptuous or scrumptious to scary, and beating illness and crime. I mean, you've got 10 different topics with these little books, and I thought, these are just wonderful. Now, you've got to let my listeners know, because I know you've been around the world, you traveled around the world, you said, for 5 years. What caused you to give in to the travel bug?
Well, after probably a lifetime of wanting to travel, and, you know, when you're working, you only get a couple of weeks a year to travel, and that just wasn't enough for us, and my husband and I decided that for our 25th wedding anniversary, we were going to take a year off and travel around the world. It was something we'd always wanted to do, and we decided to finally do it. Except we decided we couldn't quite wait till the 25th wedding anniversary. We started 2 years earlier, and we quit our jobs. We were living in Los Angeles at the time. We both had very good, well-paying corporate jobs. And so in 2006, we quit our jobs. We sold our house and absolutely everything we owned, and we decided to start traveling the world. We sort of semi-planned it. We didn't overly plan it because we weren't sure what we'd encounter once we were out there, but we knew we'd do all the planning ourselves, and with the occasional small tours here and there, maybe little cruises, that sort of thing, but you can't do that for 2 years, so we just set out, and we figured that would take care of our travel bug for a good while, so we just really enjoyed ourselves.
Well, you've put this book together. You not only did the traveling, but you obviously kept a journal on your experiences. And, you know, today you are continuing this. You're doing seminars. You're doing workshops. You are really taking it to a whole new level. I'm sure that when you sold your house and everything that you possibly could, which I know to many people listening to this, they'd say, you have got to be kidding. Are you? Oh, my goodness. How could you do something like that? Well, you were going to travel around the world for a year plus. You couldn't have a house payment and all of these other things.
That's
not
right.
Only that, but you've got to pay your expenses when you're doing this. Why, did you do it on a cruise ship? Did you decide to take a cruise ship around the world like some people do?
No. I think that would have been too limiting because there's too many places you can't get to on a cruise ship, and it's also very expensive. What we did was we actually wanted to try a little bit of everything. One of our goals was to travel in every mode of transportation possible, which I think we pretty well covered, including camels, yaks, and donkeys, and every kind of boat. And we tried everything, elephants, just everything. But no, what we did is we set out first by car. We had our own car for a few months, and then we sold it. And then we just we'd fly. We took trains, buses. Every once in a while, we'd take a short tour, usually no more than a few weeks at a time. The cruises we did were fairly short. We did one on the Yangtze River, the Amazon River, on the Nile in Egypt. Usually, they were river cruises. And of course, to go down to Antarctica, that was a 2-week cruise as well. But mostly flying between continents, and then within the continents, we usually tried to stay on the ground because you see so much more by train and by bus than, or occasionally car rentals. But we even avoided that because you really want to be paying attention to the nature and enjoy the view rather than being stressed out about where you're supposed to be going and getting lost and all that. So we kind of left the driving to anybody else who would do it for us.
Well, I think that was smart. I had some friends years ago that decided they were going to go to Russia. This was during a time where you really should have been smart enough not to do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. And their story, when they told of what they went through, how they couldn't get food and just all kinds of things, when you hear it today, it's like, oh, my goodness, that couldn't have been possible. But it was a very, very difficult time for the former Soviet Union, and it was not fun. And they actually were snubbed. They couldn't speak the language. So it was an adventure they'd never want to repeat. So let's address something, that when someone is looking at maybe being the tremendous adventurers you and your husband were, where you decide you're going to sell everything and you're just going to hoof it. You're going to go to these different places. How did you work with the budgeting on that? What would you say to someone that if they're going to do something on that big a scale, how do you plan for it? What are the steps that you need to go through?
I think it's so much easier nowadays because of the internet. It's tremendously easier to find information. Not only is there a lot of information provided by the countries themselves, but there's also a lot of information on Wikipedia. There are a lot of books online. But I think one of the best sources of information are bloggers. This is just travelers who've been there or who are there right now who write about their experiences. So you can read a whole bunch of these and get a sense from them of what they like, what they didn't like, and you can read about them and their experiences, and you can see, okay, well, you know, maybe these are younger kids, so I would have a different experience. Or maybe they're very adventurous or very sporty, and I wouldn't like that kind of thing. But if you read enough of these different blogs, and really blogs are just their own travel journals, you read these and you get a sense of how much of their travel adventures are similar to mine, or how much would I be bothered by what bothers them, or how would I cope? And you'll learn a lot from other people's experiences on how they would cope or what the issues are. And sometimes what's a big issue for one person is really not an issue at all for yourself. And so you learn a lot, and you also can ask questions. You can write to these people and say, oh, okay, I see you stayed at a hotel for, let's say, $35 a night in Kiev. What was that like? Was it okay? And maybe if it's in the spring or summer, it was fine, but in the winter, it'd be horrible because it didn't have enough, you know, maybe it didn't have much heating or insulation or whatever. And because of this conversation you can have with people all over the world, obviously depending on people who speak English, or if you speak other language, so much the better. But there is so much information out there. It really makes it much easier to plan a trip, right down to how much does it cost for a meal, for a bus ticket, for a hotel room, everything. It's the information is out there. Sometimes it's a bit overwhelming, and that can be a problem as well. But the information is out there.
Well, that's marvelous. Now, you bring out something in your book, The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad, that is so important. Here in the U.S., we generally experience bathroom facilities, even at rest stops, that are really, really tidy compared to other places in the world. And I have been in some real cesspool situations that were just hideous.
Yes,
and,
we do.
Okay, so you've got to talk about this, because lots of times when people are traveling to different countries, if they've not been outside of the U.S., I'm not talking about Canada either. Canada is our next-door neighbor. So they're pretty much like us in most situations. And by golly, you get out of the U.S., you start going to Africa or to certain areas in China or wherever. You're going to encounter some interesting things, aren't you?
Well, and what I do with the book, like, yes, you are going to encounter some interesting situations, but what I do with the book is I want to prepare people for it, just that, you know, things aren't always done the way they're done at home, obviously. That's why we go abroad to experience different things. And so I even explain, you know, how the mechanics of toilets are different in every country. And I want to prepare people for it so that they're not shocked or, you know, because sometimes you come to use the toilet and you're looking at it and you're going, okay, what do I do with this thing? Because it's, you know, it's foreign enough that you're not sure what to do. But there's also certain precautions you can take and certain things you can do. Part of it is preparing yourself mentally, and part of it is just having things like bring your own tissues with you at all times and, you know, hand cleansers and certain things like that that will prepare you to deal with, you know, some of the unfortunate situations you might find yourself in. Because sometimes when you got to go, you got to go, and you just have no choice. This is the situation in certain countries. But I would find we lived in China for a year as well, and the majority of places we traveled to were fairly modern, fairly clean. It was fairly rare, even in Africa, except in the bush, or when we were out camping, that we had real problems with the facilities. And what I tell people is, if you've ever been camping, if you've ever been to a bush toilet, you know, or, you know, campground, you know, more rustic, let's say, toilets, you can usually pretty well manage toilets around the world. Sometimes you have to squat, you know, and sometimes they're not the cleanest, so you always have, you know, shoes on. Obviously, you don't go anywhere near bare feet. So I don't like to scare people off just because of that, because you got to be a little bit adventurous. Just hold your nose and go.
Well, I mean, heck, if you ever did camping and you were out in the middle of the woods and you got lucky enough to have an outhouse, usually we went in, you checked for snakes and spiders.
Exactly. Yeah, you hated the spiders.
And you held your breath.
Exactly. You hated the spiders. In the middle of the summer, the darn things were full of flies, and it smelled like heck, and you hated it, but you had to use it, and you did it, right? So it's kind of the
same
thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about France a little bit, because you have a cute story in here about the French, and you and your mother, Adele, were at a restaurant in a small village, and lunch was just very simple and very delighted, but something happened when a bottle of wine was to be opened.
Right. It was really a funny story, because it was just a very, very simple meal. I think it was chicken and vegetables and bread, and, I mean, dessert was just like a bowl of apples, and there were these construction workers and farmers, and just my mother and I were the only tourists there in this tiny little village. There were maybe, I don't know, maybe a dozen, 15 people being served, and this one woman was the owner of the restaurant. She and her husband, who cooked all the meals, she was serving us all, and really, really busy, and nobody said anything throughout the meal. I mean, everybody's just busy eating and just talking, and I guess it was kind of noisy, but it felt like it was really a nice atmosphere for us, because it felt like a family meal. But then when she opened a bottle of wine and the cork popped, the whole place went dead quiet, as if it was the worst thing that a person could possibly do with a bottle of wine, which I know you're not supposed to let a cork pop, but this is France, you know, they think very highly of their wines. And then all of a sudden, these farmers and construction workers were all like, I don't know, just like, making all sorts of noises at her, like as if she'd offended their sensibilities by popping this cork. My mother and I just looked at each other. We just laughed. We thought it was so funny that these people were so offended by the popping of this cork. I mean, it was just like, it was like as if you would do that at a tiny little greasy spoon restaurant. You wouldn't think twice of somebody popping a cork in this country. But in France, wine and food are very important, and it was just part of the culture.
You have information in here on some experiences that you went through. You talk about visas. You talk about forms when you're going into different countries that you have to fill out. I know we had to do it for Russia. We had to do forms when we flew over there in the 90s. We had the forms for each country. We stopped in, and you go to Hawaii. You have to fill out forms. You had some pretty frustrating experiences with dealing with visas and other things. What would you tell a traveler to be aware of when they're going into different countries?
Well, I have a lot of patience because you never know what to expect. I remember at one border crossing where the border guard was, or the immigration officer was correcting our penmanship. I mean, you just don't know what to expect. It was really funny.
Your penmanship?
Yes. It's like the guy didn't have enough work to do and he didn't feel important enough or something. So he was correcting our penmanship. We just laughed. I mean, at that point, I think we'd been through about 30 borders and you just, you know, there's nothing you can do or say because you don't want to tick off anybody. So you just have to come ready, have your own pen, have all your papers in order, obviously. Don't get angry when you may be charged a different fee than somebody else to enter the country, because something people don't realize is that the entry fees or the visa fees are usually reciprocated. And that means that if the U.S. charges a Brazilian to come into our country, let's say $150, then Brazil will reciprocate and will charge an American the same amount of money to go to Brazil. While a Canadian might be charged $50 to go to Brazil for that visa, because Canada only charges Brazilians $50. So the fees are different based on your nationality, and a lot of people don't realize that. So they arrive at the border or they go to the embassy to get their passport stamps or their visas, and they get very upset when they hear how different the fees are. But these are often based on what our own countries charge their citizens. So it's an important information to know.
I had to chuckle when you said there's an attitude generally when you're traveling, if you're over 50, you're okay. They're not threatened. When you're under 50, then they are just absolutely going to check all kinds of stuff depending on where you go. And I thought that was a very interesting perspective to observe. And like you said, it's amazing.
I think it's probably even lower than 50, but certainly by 50 years old, they don't think we're going to go there and steal anybody's jobs. We look like we have a little bit of money, so we look like we'll have enough money to get ourselves out of the country. And we're not likely to be carrying drugs or, you know, any other contraband. So those are usually the things that really concern immigration folks at the border. So they're pretty easy on you. They check that you have the right documents, that you have the money to pay the visa fee, and, you know, usually there's not much more that they're concerned about with people our age. So it's actually a huge advantage to traveling when you're a little older, is they just assume you're only there to visit. You're going to leave your money in the hotels and restaurants and in the shops, and they're very happy to have you come. And so it's really not a hassle the way when you're much younger, where they think, it's like the old prejudice against the hippies. There's still lots of young hippies out there, as we found out all over the world, young kids in their 20s who are going backpacking around the world and looking for temporary jobs where they might go and work under the table, you know, maybe waiting tables or digging ditches or whatever they can find just so that they can live in another country for a few months. And that's exactly the kind of people the immigration folks don't want, because it takes work away from the locals.
Mm-hmm.
But with older folks, they don't expect us to be waiting tables for 50 cents an hour.
Well, no kidding. The information you give on accommodations, no matter where you travel, that's one of the biggest expenses. You go to New York City, it'll cost you an amazing amount of money. You'll be lucky if you find something for under $400 a night.
It's very expensive.
It's extraordinarily expensive. And you bring out some good points about lodging, and that there is often the question posed to a traveler, would you like to see the room? And here in America, like you said in your book, so much is standardized, we don't even think about that. Because we see it on the Internet, and that's great. So what tips would you have to share relative to accommodations? Because that is one of, besides air travel, that is one of the biggest expenses.
Exactly. It's usually the second most expensive thing you'll spend your money on. It will be accommodations. So what I tell people is first is be open to different types of accommodations. Don't assume right away that you should go to a resort or a hotel, for that matter. There's lots and lots of options, especially nowadays. There's a lot of apartments that are for rent. So you can get an apartment for a week for the cost of maybe two nights at a hotel. And with your apartment, you get a little kitchenette so you can make some of your meals and save a little bit of money that way. You actually feel like you're more at home as well if you go into the grocery stores and you learn more about a country or a city when you go shopping with the locals. You learn more about everything from the cooking to just, you know, how stores are organized. So there's that. There's also hostels. We stayed in a lot of hostels, which some are quite nice. In Spain, we stayed in gorgeous historical buildings, old mansions that we never would have been able to get in if had we not been staying there as guests. And this is for, like, you know, $15 to $20 per person per night in private rooms, by the way, with private bathrooms.
Oh, my.
Yes, very inexpensive. And this is in cities like Madrid. And, you know, why stay in hotels when you can stay in beautiful old mansions for very inexpensively. There's also one thing we did in Africa, and this isn't available everywhere, but we really enjoyed doing this. It's called overlanding, and it's actually camping trips. And what you get is it's done as a group tour. So you get in this big truck that can stay off-road, and they supply all the tents and the sleeping pads, and you bring your sleeping bag. And the truck is loaded with a kitchen and all the food you need, and you go in groups. And it works well in Africa because we were going on safaris. And so instead of staying in hotels, we stayed in our tents. And because the truck was, you know, we had everything we needed, all the food, all the lodging, everything we needed, and we could stay off-road, we were able to go deep into the bush where we could, and into the jungles, to really see a lot of wildlife, as well as some amazing African villages that hadn't changed in thousands of years. So it was really interesting. So that's another option. It's just a totally different way of finding accommodations is camping, either through a tour or by yourself. So yeah, there are a lot of options, and I think people need to just open their minds up a little bit to different options, because it's a lot less expensive, and with the variety, you just get a different type of vacation as well.
There is something that nobody likes to experience, and that is illness.
Yeah.
And I have had friends that have traveled overseas. I remember one person was in China, and they had made the mistake of, it was very, very hot when they were there, and they were eating popsicles being sold by a vendor. Well, they got dysentery. They got very, very sick, and diarrhea like you wouldn't believe. And he was told later that don't ever, ever, there were two Englishmen that apparently had traveled in China quite extensively, and asked what he had had. So he told them, and they said it was the popsicles that got you.
Yep.
Because everything else you had was cooked or boiled. Well, you know, the water is boiling for the tea or what have you. So it was a big, big lesson for him. And you bring a point out in your book that, unlike the United States, we are so accustomed to walking into a Walgreens or a pharmacy of one type or another, or Savons or what have you. We're so accustomed to that. And we've got all kinds of choices. That doesn't happen once you leave this country and you're overseas. Tell us some of your experiences with that.
Okay, well, that's true. I mean, you brought up so many issues there. For one thing, is always watch what it is you're eating and never have anything that has water or ice cream. Milk products are very dangerous and water, so that's one thing. The other thing is, in many countries, you can't just walk into a store, like a drugstore, and find what you're looking for. A couple of reasons for that. One is often they're not organized that way. And this is true in England and France, much of Europe. So it's not just, you know, Asian countries or elsewhere. Part of it is just the culture and the tradition. So what you need is you need to tell a pharmacist or a clerk at the pharmacy what ails you. You have to be able to explain what ails you, and they'll give you the products or they'll recommend a product that might help you. That's very difficult when you don't speak the language, when you don't know. They might treat diarrhea in a completely different way than we would at home. You don't know necessarily how to explain what you have. You don't know what caused it. So it's really difficult. And, you know, a phrase book helps, but usually what I try to do is, number one, is try to prevent any illness. Obviously, everybody wants to do that. So you do your research in advance, and you take certain steps, such as avoiding water and milk products and uncooked food, to try to avoid that. And then have a good phrase book that does give you the phrases you need for certain common illnesses that travelers almost always have to deal with. And then bring a few things that might help you against diarrhea and such. Most travelers will have a little first aid kit to help them, at least for the first few times that this happens, and hopefully you won't run out during your trip. But most people learn, once you've had traveler's diarrhea, you just never want to experience that again. It's not just, you know, the inconvenience is you can be quite sick and dehydrated and get feverish, and it can really ruin a holiday.
No kidding. Really can be uncomfortable. So being attentive, yes, and paying, you know, paying attention to your suggestions is a very good thing. And I know we're coming close to being out of time, but I did want to mention there's a segment on your book for people that might want to travel, don't have a whole bunch of money, they could volunteer. That
Absolutely.
Is a very good idea.
It's becoming very popular to volunteer on your vacations, and there's a lot of different ways to do it. Some of them are quite expensive, so you have to be careful. But if you look online, and actually in my book I do mention a few places, and actually if you go on my website I have more resources there. I didn't put a lot of resources in the book for volunteering because the organizations change frequently enough, and but I keep that up to date on my website. So I list some of the organizations people might want to check out so that you can connect with an organization that is looking for someone with your skills, maybe at a destination you'd be interested in. And various organizations, some are fairly expensive, some are really nonprofit, and all they want is to bring in people to experience the community. And actually, I just ran across a new one, a woman from the U.S. who brings people to Jamaica to help them. And I had never thought of Jamaica, but of course that's another country, a Caribbean country that has a lot of poverty, and she's made it her mission in life to bring volunteers together with Jamaicans and to give people nice holidays, but at the same time they feel great doing good works while they're there.
Well, I think it's just amazing. Your book has so much information, not only the book itself, The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad, to Travel, Live, Give, and Learn, but you also have, again, these 10 little books, Where in the World, What to Take, What to Pack. Oh, that's a big one. We women always want to take, you know, everything, including the kitchen sink. And I've got a spouse that pretty much packs that way, too. So you often have to carry your own luggage when you're in places like this. Give us your website. Is it babyboomerstraveling.com?
That's right, yes.
All right, babyboomerstraveling.com. There's all kinds of information there. So if you're an adventurer, and I'd say no matter what your age is, but especially if you're a mature individual and maybe you've been working so hard all your life and you say, I want to do something different. I want to do like Doris did. I want to be able to take some time off. Well, maybe you're not going to be able to take off a few years like she and her husband did, but maybe you want to take a few weeks and have an adventure. Go someplace you've never been before. Her book is a wonderful resource, The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad. Check out her website. She's got little booklets, too, that you can order on all kinds of subjects, babyboomerstraveling.com. Dora Scallon, it's just been wonderful having you as a guest, and my goodness, you're still out there working with different people. Keep it up. Traveling is something we all should experience.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Donna.
You're very welcome. It's been a delight having you as a guest. The Boomer's Guide to Going Abroad. It's really for anybody. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. Don't go away. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com. To see more details, God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or your initial, then I'll tell you what I perceive, and you can also ask me a question about anything that you like. So again, 888-627-6008. When we went to Russia, just complimenting our guest that we had on the air, when we went to Russia, and we did this in 1992, which is quite a while back, but it was amazing in the experience because so many things that we take for granted here were just not available. Of course, we had been warned. We were part of a tour group, and I did interviews and had them sent back here to the United States so they could be played on air with the show I was doing at the time. And it's a wonderful experience that we just treasure. But it was fascinating when we were there because we really had big ahas. We had been told that they were so far ahead of us in certain things, and they could do this, they could do that. This was a big, big enemy. And when we drove into the city of Moscow, they had given us a bus, we saw such disrepair with bridges and streets and everything else. And I know some things have changed since then, but I was just absolutely amazed. It was fascinating. And I must say that the Russian people were absolutely wonderful, the people that we encountered. But we also saw a lot of things. We were on one of those rare tour groups where we actually got behind the scenes. We were a business group, and it was quite a fascinating experience. And you never forget that. There's something about being in another country where you are introduced to a culture, and the Russian culture is different. It just has an amazing amount of history to it. And then you go to Finland and you have another environment, and then, you know, you might go into some other places. But I think to travel the way Doris and her husband did is really quite exceptional. And I think when you have a chance to do that and you can go other places and you can see other circumstances, boy, I'll tell you, everybody on the plane we were with, when we got to American soil, many of them actually got down on the ground and kissed the dirty concrete that they were standing on. They were so glad to be in the United States. And I think that sometimes we have to step out of our comfort zone, step into different environments so we can appreciate what we have. And that is an amazing thing. It is something we don't think anything about. We expect 7-Elevens everywhere. We go and go into the grocery stores. We have millions of items in a grocery store. And I can remember years ago, someone saying to me, who was from Estonia. This was a woman who had lived in the United States for a long time, and she had such vivid memories because she was a woman that had survived the communist environment and the severe oppression of the Soviets against the Estonians. In fact, she used to run black market items like medical supplies. She would get them donated by dentists that weren't using certain materials anymore, and she'd take them to the black market underground. She risked her life for so many years to try to get people help in Estonia by getting them supplies. And she would get letters from dentists that would say, we didn't have anything to fill cavities with. We didn't have anything at all to use. This is wonderful. Thank you so much. And she one day said to me, this is disgusting. In the United States, you have too many choices. And I thought that that was just an amazing comment for her to make. But sometimes when we have lived in a world that has been so encapsulated, and you come into a world where innovation has been supported, where people have lots of choices, it gets to be absolutely an amazing experience. I think it's marvelous when we have all these choices. But as long as I live, I'll never forget her saying, too many choices. We shouldn't have so many choices. And I don't think she realized that subconsciously she was flashing back to a time when she's lucky if she would even have a choice about anything. So that's the thing about having a free enterprise environment and to be able to do things, to be able to be innovative, to be able to make choices about what works for you and what doesn't. And in so many places in the world, you don't have that. So I think when you do travel and you can open your eyes and you don't compare people to you, but you just appreciate where they are, what they're going through, what their lifestyle is, what do they have available to them, it really, really gives you an appreciation for where you are. I know it made me shift in so many different directions of my thinking. And I went, wow, I really am grateful to be able to live in an environment where there is the freedom, where I can get in an automobile, drive any place in the country that I want, and I can literally eat anything I want. If I want to pay for it, I can do that. And I can have meat, no meat, vegetables. I mean, it's amazing. Just go into your grocery store sometime, and just for the heck of it, walk through your produce section, walk up and down the aisle. I don't care whether the food is processed or not, and realize there's a lot of places in the world that never, ever have that opportunity, and you have the opportunity of choice. So remember that if you're complaining about, gee whiz, I wish they'd take this off the shelf, that off the shelf, remember, you have the choice to choose. In a lot of places, you don't. So again, I just think Doris's suggestions were wonderful, and I would hope that you would take advantage of any travel opportunities you might have. Well, tomorrow's the big tea day. Yes, the gobble, gobble, turkey, turkey. And I've got a wonderful image in front of me of some winter squash of different types, yellows, orange, white, just all kinds of shapes and colors and sizes. And Simone Sahelian wrote these few words. She said, pumpkins and gourds and bright autumn leaves, acorns and pine cones and a crisp evening breeze. Thanksgiving is upon us. And it really, really is. And I tell you so many times, I just love cooking shows. And I just am fascinated with all of the variety of things that people have been showing on different cooking shows, things to eat, plus traditional dishes that they really love. So it's just, to me, it's a wonderful, wonderful holiday. And one of the fun things is to share recipes with people. Whenever you get together and you're having friends over, oh, do you got this one this year? We've got something new over here. We're trying this, like a pumpkin, pecan, brittle type of topping pie. And, you know, it's just so many things. I just love the creativity of people. It's absolutely wonderful. Speaking of creativity, if you'd like to chat with me, the telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, tomorrow being the Thanksgiving holiday, we're going to have a Best of Donna because I'm going to be celebrating the day with friends. And I wanted you to know that we are going to have a show on, if you wanted to tune in. We're going to have a show about an animal communicator. It's a replay of a show that was done earlier this month. And then on Friday, well, we'll be back live in studio. Success Against the Odds, Vonda White. We are going to be chatting with her and finding out what she would recommend to beat the odds of disappointment, disillusionment, whatever it might be, and turn things around and get your show on the road. So this is going to be a dynamic week, and I hope that you definitely will choose to share your time with us. Don't forget, 888-627-6008. Well, now, here in the Pacific Northwest, fireplaces have been doing a lot of action recently, and we really enjoy our fireplaces here in the Pacific Northwest, and, of course, we've blessed with an abundance of wood and beautiful, beautiful trees, and we've had a tremendous storm come through, and fortunately, it didn't do a heck of a lot of damage, but the water has been flowing, our liquid gold, as I like to call it. Well, when you've got those fires going, which I know in so many parts of the country, so many of you are enjoying that as well, you need to be aware of safety. And I can remember before we got our insert for our fireplace, we'd have logs that would roll out of the fireplace, just vroom. And because our fireplace is sort of up on a ledge style environment, it was really quite a trauma. It could happen instantaneously. You could have just checked the wood a moment before, and then all of a sudden, if something has happened where the weight has shifted and it picks up that moving dynamic and you've got a burning log on your floor. Not fun, believe me. Also, if you have a flue, if you have a standard fireplace, we've had situations where the flue would close when you didn't want it. So you really need to pay attention if you have a fireplace. Installing a chimney cap is very important. It keeps out debris. Like we have heavy winds here, you can have leaves, branches, all kinds of stuff that can blow into your chimney, believe it or not. However, also what can happen, you can get birds in your chimney. We got them. We got birds one year in our chimney. They actually had put a nest in. So what did we do? We had to get a cap for our fireplace. This was years ago. And it keeps animals out, raccoons, and other things. Of course, if the fireplace is going, that's not a big deal. But you really should have a cap there because of the draw for the fireplace. If you have a cap, you're going to have a better draw so that your heat is going to be more appropriately distributed. And you should always use a metal screen or a glass fireplace door. We have an insert that put my mind to rest. It was a big investment for us, but we have enjoyed years of satisfaction and knowing we wouldn't have to be concerned about a fire or anything else. It was just, we could close it up at night, no gas is coming out into the room, really good. Also, it's a good idea to have your chimney inspected annually. Over in Switzerland, I believe it is, it's mandatory. They have the chimney sweeps go around, and you must have your chimneys checked. And they have avoided having chimney fires because of that. Why? Because creosote builds up along chimney walls, and it will actually cause your chimney to burn and create a fire in your home that is just unbelievable. So you don't want to go there. Also, it's a good idea to burn well-seasoned hardwood, and you want to be sure that it has had a chance to dry. And I know my husband once went out and chopped up some wood that we happened to have out in the yard, and he put it in the fireplace, and there was a nice roaring fire, and I was upstairs working, and I said, what in the world? what's that horrible smell? Well, without thinking, he had chopped up some treated wood, like you might have out on your deck or something else, and you just tossed it in. Well, the smell was terrible. What you're doing, you're getting toxic fumes in your house. So you don't want to burn anything that has been treated with chemicals when it comes to wood. They say don't burn cardboard, newspapers, or trash in your fireplace. Well, I can't plead innocent to that because there have been times I have used trash as a starter to get the fire going. And you need to keep furniture, decorations, and other potentially flammable material is 2 feet from the fireplace, and always have a fire extinguisher handy. These are tips that are important. I'll tell you what happened 1 year with us. Well, I'll tell you when we come back. Anyway, Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Siebel. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com. and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi. You know, with a holiday, there is nothing like freshly baked muffins or bread, you know, or bread for breakfast. So I've got a wonderful recipe I wanted to share with you. But let me just share with you something that happened with the fireplace, because I told you I would. This 1 year, it was a holiday, and I had fixed a great big turkey. And we were making preparations for things, and I had done what you call brown bagging a turkey. People don't do that very much today because you don't have a lot of brown bags available, and a lot of the bags today have different types of chemicals in them. But those that were, I had at the time didn't have that kind of problem. And it's a great way to bake a turkey. It's just absolutely marvelous. It absorbs the grease. It browns just beautifully. It's just absolutely incredible. Well, I had finished taking it out of the oven and removed the turkey and had the brown bag, and of course the fat was in the bag. Well, my husband was working at the fireplace area getting a fire stoked and ready to go. And at the time we didn't have our insert, and we had a flue, naturally, where you have to reach for it, you have to open it up. So he had opened it up, and I had asked him, are you sure you have it open? He said, oh yeah. He said, I just opened it up. He said, hey, give me that paper bag that's got all the turkey grease and everything in it. We'll just throw it in the fireplace and just burn it up. And I said, no, it's not turkey grease. No, let's do it. Well, the next thing I know, he puts it in there, and flames just suddenly explode out from the fireplace. The flue had flipped down. It had closed. So there was no way that any of the flame caused by the grease of these brown paper bags could go anywhere but out. Out into the room. Well, he was reaching in and trying to get that flue open. I had my big baking pan, and I filled it. It just was so fast. I got water into it right away, ran over, put water on the fire, and of course, you know, everything got real dark and smoky. We had to paint the whole downstairs area because it got so smoky, but the fire was out. We could have lost our home. It happened that fast. So these warnings about the fireplace, now we don't have that concern anymore because we have it enclosed. The insert is there, and we have that safety factor. But I just share that with you. Because sometimes a very simple thing can occur, and you have to be prepared. And I remember that time, we didn't have a fire extinguisher by the fireplace, so it's a good thing to have. Donna Siebel here, 888-627-6008. Well, how about fixing something? And you can set this up if you wanted to do it like tonight, or even the day after Thanksgiving, you know, the weekend's coming up too. I know Black Friday's right around the corner, and people are all excited. They've got ads going. Be up at 4 in the morning and stand in line at your favorite store. I've never understood that. To me, that's just sort of insanity. You work all day just to have Thanksgiving, and then you have to be up at 2 or 3 in the morning if you have that opportunity to go out and go shopping. I mean, I've got a friend that does it. It's done it every year, and it's just beyond me. But regardless, this is a recipe that you can prepare a lot of this in advance, just have it set up, and then you can mix it in the morning when you want to have it. And the smell is just terrific. These are cranberry streusel muffins. Now, what makes it smell so good? Well, of course, the cinnamon and all of that. It's just absolutely wonderful. So I'm going to give you the recipe. First, I'm going to give you the recipe for the streusel. And by the way, this kind of streusel, you can use it on a pumpkin pie if you want. You can use it, mix some nuts in with it. So this is a basic streusel recipe. You're going to have a third of a cup of packed light brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and 1 tablespoon of butter. I usually double up on the cinnamon. I'm a cinnamon person. And then you just mix it. There it is. It's all ready to go. Put it in a little bowl and put it to the side. Then, for your muffins, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 1 3/4 cups of all-purpose flour, 3/4 teaspoon of baking powder, 1/2 teaspoon each of baking soda and salt, and then 3 eggs, and these need to be at room temperature, by the way. 3 eggs, you need 3/4 cup of granulated sugar, and 1/2 cup of sour cream, 1/2 cup of whole berry cranberry sauce, great for that leftover cranberry sauce, 1/2 cup of sweetened dried cranberries, and then you're going to need 1/4 cup of butter melted, 1 teaspoon of grated lemon zest, and that's the rest of the ingredients. So this is how simple it is. You're going to want to heat your oven to 350 degrees, and you want to coat 10 muffin cups. This makes about 10 muffins. And it might be, well, if you're like me, you might want to make just 6 jumbo ones. I like to do that, especially if there's just a few of us. But you can double this recipe, too. But whatever you want to do, just go ahead and spray the muffin cups with cooking spray or use your paper cup holders. And then your streusel, you've already mixed that. In a large bowl, you're going to put together your flour, your baking powder, your soda, your salt. And then in a different bowl, you want to put your eggs, your sugar, your sour cream, your cranberry sauce, dried cranberries, butter, and lemon zest, and you want to just blend them together. Use your blender, your portable hand beater, and you go, bzz, bzz, and it's all done. Then you want to take and your flour mixture, you want to stir it in, and you don't want to beat this because these are muffins, but you then just mix it all together, put it in your muffin tins, and then you take your fingers with your streusel and you push the streusel mixture. You put it together, you want to form crumbs, and you divide it evenly over the muffin batter. You're going to bake your muffins for about 18 to 20 minutes. You want to be sure that they're done, so take a bamboo skewer stick or a toothpick and check into the center of one. Make sure they're done. Let them cool for about 10 minutes, and yum, they're ready to go. And fresh butter, and oh, it's just terrific. great with scrambled eggs, and just keep it simple. You've already worked so hard to make your Thanksgiving so very, very special, but this just is wonderful for any kind of a morning period where you want something different, perfect for this time of the year. This is Donna Siebel. I want you and your family and friends to just have an absolutely fabulous Thanksgiving holiday. I will be back with you in studio live on Friday, where we're going to have success against all odds. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Be grateful. Take time to really observe, appreciate, and be thankful for the blessings you have, because you really should be. There is so much to be grateful for. This is Donna Siebel. Talk to you on Friday. Enjoy show tomorrow with the Animal Communicator. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.